This program is brought to you by the partners of A Rood Awakening International. Help others find truth. Support A Rood Awakening International today.
Years ago, Mount Sinai pioneers Jim and Penny Caldwell risked their lives to cross the uninhabited Saudi desert just to get a glimpse of the mountain of God. Well, today, Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire report that their recent trip will be known as the last such expedition because of a phenomenon never seen in the history of the world. Because it's the end of the sixth day, the sun is set, and this is Shabbat Night Live. Well, hey, Shabbat Shalom, Torah fans. Welcome to Shabbat Night Live with Michael Rood. Oh, you are in for a treat tonight. Miles Jones is back with his good friend and producer, Patrick McGuire. And tonight, you are going to see something never seen in the history of the world. These guys went back to Sinai, and they have some crazy stories to tell, miraculous stories, in fact. So stay tuned for episode one of our four-part series, Miracles at Sinai. And it would have been a miracle if the barley was Aviv this week, but guess what? It wasn't. So that means we are now into a 13th month, also known as Adar Bet on the astronomically and agriculturally corrected biblical Hebrew calendar. And with that said, we could talk about having Passover in April. So please welcome my co-host, Michael Rood. Well, welcome, sir.
Thank you, Scott. It's good to be here.
It kind of was a slim chance to none that barley was going to be Aviv in March.
Yes, but we're going to do a new movie. It's called The 11 Commandments.
Oh, really? What's the 11th commandment?
The 11th commandment is, thou shalt keep a feast to me three times a year. And Passover is the one that starts it all out.
That's right.
And so we're going to have a great time with the 11th commandment.
Okay, and that is April 26th to 28th. You see it there on the bottom of your screen. If there's still tickets available, you can get tickets available. Go on that website, see if everything's still available. If not, I mean, it was getting pretty tight there, so if nothing's available, you can still watch it online. And Michael, you're gonna be here, which is great.
Oh yes, I wouldn't miss it.
Okay, good. Well, people would be pretty concerned.
Yeah,
if you missed Passover.
I would be breaking the commandments.
Yeah, that's right. That would not be what we do here. That's right. Now, speaking of something else special that we're doing, we were clearing out part of the office. We're kind of consolidating some things, and guess what we found? This is literally how it happened.
Wow, the original elephant ear.
Elephant ear, yes.
Yeah, it's made of elephant ears. The front cover is one ear, and the back cover is another.
You don't say.
It takes a whole elephant to make this.
Wow, don't tell PETA.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's leatherette, okay? It's leatherette. Anyways, we found two boxes of these, and these are the first edition chronological gospels. That is the leatherette version that was really rare to begin with, and we found two boxes.
Yeah, this was made in South Africa.
Yeah, this really was made in South Africa. And it took us forever to get them, as I recall.
Yeah, they had to be shipped by boat.
Yeah.
From South Africa.
And it took a long time. I remember that was back in 2013, I think we did those. It was
ancient history.
It is ancient history. So we decided that, you know what would be good for Michael to do? And we didn't ask him, we just kind of said, we're just gonna get Michael to do this. We asked him nicely to sign each one of these. So they are now—
Oh, thanks, Scott.
Oh, you didn't know that yet? Oh, well now you know.
Yeah, I know that now.
So each one is signed by Michael Rood. I think there's only 50 of them, so don't worry, you're not gonna have to work that hard on that. But anyhow, so this is the first edition. So keep in mind that this will not match up with if you have anything that's second edition, like the study guide or anything like that. But it's a great keepsake to have. And if you have the first edition study guide, great, yes, it will line right up. None of the, I think one or two of the events change numbers, but most of it lines up with the chart too, so.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's just the page numbers change, that's all. But anyway, so that's a beautiful thing. There's on the bottom of your screen how you can get it there. And something else we need to talk about is biblical manhood, because everyone's forgot what it means to be a man. especially according to the Bible.
Yeah.
And so that's what Bear Independent is talking about. Bear just finished up his series with us last week on Shabbat Night Live. We still have a couple of weeks left of his teaching with us. And that is for the love gift. And for a gift of $50 or more, we will give you this teaching. You're not buying the teaching. We're saying thank you for giving us a gift to keep this ministry running. And we are going to give you that gift. Michael, something else that's kind of special, this over here, this tumbler.
Oh, yeah.
One-of-a-kind tumbler that was made here for a Rood Awakening folks. And it's not going to be made anytime ever again by, you know, for anyone else with this design. So this is the only time you can get it. And because of that exclusivity, they may run out.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It says, "Be still and know that I am Yehovah." And it's peppered with verses all over here, like, "I will give you rest," Matthew 1:28. "Taste and see that Yehovah is good." "Pray about everything," Philippians 4:6. So all these type of verses are on here. And speaking of praying, it also comes with a prayer journal. So this is a Be Still and Know prayer journal that also comes with this. And this is your gift for $100 or more. And for $300 or more, we have actually something over here with 14 karat gold on it.
Yeah, this Ramon.
Yes.
It's a pomegranate.
It's a pomegranate. And very popular. Did you have any pomegranate trees when you lived in Israel?
Yes, I did.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, the flower on the bottom is a Star of David.
Okay, oh yeah, because it just kind of grows that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it grows that way.
Okay, is that where they got it from?
Yes, I think so. Because the Hebrew word for it is Ramon. And remember, Naaman the leper, he said, "Forgive me if I go in with my master and bow in front of Ramon." And the prophet said, "Go your way in peace. God knows your heart."
Mm, okay, and that involved a pomegranate.
Yeah, Ramon, pomegranate.
Interesting, wow. So they grow just as common as an apple tree in the U.S.?
Oh, yes, even more.
Wow. I love pomegranates, but they're so rare to find. They don't keep around.
Yeah, we had a couple in the backyard.
Mm, wow.
They're very tasty.
Yeah, I love pomegranates. How to cut them is always a trick, but wouldn't have to cut this one. The gold accents on here are actually, it's 24 karat gold on here. So it's a beautiful thing to have. And again, this is our way of saying thank you.
Oh, this is a tile. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a tile. You can hang it up. I suppose you could even put it in the wall with other tiles if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And a certificate of authenticity on the back. It was made by Israeli artists.
Oh, yeah.
So hand-painted.
Oh, that's really something.
It's a beautiful thing, yep.
Yeah.
All right, so tonight we have another beautiful thing. First episode of our new series, Miracles at Sinai, with Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire. Take a look.
This was the last expedition across the desert to Sinai.
Yeah, now tell me why you say that.
Well, they built a road, and while we were there, we came in across the desert in our Land Rovers, which was a bumpy ride, but we went all around the region, you know, in crossing the desert. But while we were there at Sinai during that period, they built a road in there, which you could see in the film.
They're building.
They're setting up for tourism. They'll have hotels there. Everyone can come. And this is prophetic. You know, it says in Isaiah 1 and Micah, it says that all in the end days, all nations will come up to Har Yehovah. That's the mountain of God in Hebrew. They will all come up to Har Yehovah. And then that will set off a new series of events.
All right, well, there you have it. Years ago, Mount Sinai pioneers Jim and Penny Caldwell risked their lives across the uninhabited Saudi desert just to get a glimpse of the mountain of God. Well, today, Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire report that their recent trip will be known as the last such expedition. We'll tell you why next, but first, you need to see this.
What does it mean to be a man? Is it what the world says? If that's true, why are there so many broken lives, broken homes, and broken spirits when men do things the world's way?
So many men will say yes when it's convenient. And then when it's time to cash in that yes, "Oh, it's too difficult. My wife's unhappy. I got a thing going on." No, you said you would be there.
In this month's Love Gift teaching, Biblical Manhood, survivalist teacher, firearms expert, emergency response instructor, entrepreneur, and servant of the Most High, Bear Independent, reestablishes the simple biblical model of what Yehovah expects of men in every aspect of their lives. This teaching is not available anywhere online, but we'll give it to you as our thanks for supporting A Rood Awakening International. When you donate $50 as a love gift to this ministry in March, we'll send you Biblical Manhood with Bear Independent on DVD or Blu-ray. Donate $100 and we'll send you Biblical Manhood, plus a 40-ounce stainless steel insulated tumbler with encouraging verses from the Bible, plus a matching prayer journal. Donate $300 and we'll send you Biblical Manhood, the matching stainless steel tumbler and prayer journal, and a limited edition clay plaque, hand-painted in Israel, featuring pomegranate artwork and 24-karat gold accents. These gifts are a limited-time offer from Michael Rood to thank you for your support. Make your donation today and receive the $50 gift, the $100 gift, or the $300 gift. Thank you. Your donations ensure that important teachings like Biblical Manhood keep coming from A Rood Awakening International. Use your smartphone to scan the QR code on your screen to donate now and receive these limited-time gifts. Or call 888-766-3610. Or get your gifts online with a donation at monthlylovegift.com.
For the past 20 years, I've lived in the land of Israel, and I've had many occasions to eat in the home of Orthodox Jews and on Shabbat, as the two challah loaves were brought out, representing the double portion of manna that fell from heaven, and that we would not need to be collecting manna the next day, but his provision is there for us. And as they said the blessing, Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, I of course know the Adonai is really Yehovah, I know that. And then as they took the cup and said, Baruch atah Yehovah, Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, Barei Pari Hagafen, I would sit at that table and I would recognize and understand that what they are doing, this is what was done from the time that the Melech Tzadik brought forth bread and wine to Abraham. And Yeshua said, this represents my body, which is broken for you. This cup represents the renewed covenant in my blood. As often as you do this, wherever you do it in remembrance of me. The remembrance of them are all around. And this is what the Almighty put in place for us to understand. And this is why Yeshua said, Abraham saw my day and rejoiced. We do this in remembrance of him. Shabbat shalom.
So we all know that 3,000 plus years ago, there were some miracles at Mount Sinai. That's pretty obvious. We read about them in the Bible. But there were also some modern miracles at Sinai, and we have two fellows here that are going to tell us about that today, Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire. Welcome to Shabbat Night Live.
Thank you, thank you. Very excited to be here. It's been since Passover special.
Yeah.
We had just gotten back from our expedition to Mount Sinai. Now we have some new stuff to share with the audience that didn't get to see the Passover special.
Okay.
That plus more, so.
All right, well, we'll get to video in just a sec, but Miles, you've been here before, our audience knows you, but Patrick, you are new to our audience. Introduce yourself a little bit. Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, I'm a TV producer. I was the crew, we put together a crew to go to Mount Sinai, which I did not want to miss, and having seen all the stuff on Shabbat Night Live as well, definitely wanted to be part of that.
Yeah.
And you know, then when the opportunity came, it was like, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
But my background is I've been in TV news. Don't hold it against me. that was back in the day when we actually did journalism. And then I've had my own production company and I've been working with ministries really for the last 25 years.
And you were just telling me before the cameras came on that you have followed Michael Rood and Shabbat Night Live for a long time. You guys have been part of an Aviv Fellowship or started an Aviv Fellowship or something to that effect.
Now that we're in Austin, I asked, is there an Aviv Fellowship in Austin? And of course, there's not. So now there's pressure to start one. But yeah, it's really amazing. And as we begin to really get into our Hebrew roots, I was working with a company in Israel that was a high-tech company, and they actually do the tech for the Bible Museum today. And we were working on a project back in 2009 and 10. So that kind of really pushed me back to the Hebrew roots because I was the token Christian on the
group. Okay.
And we were developing a program for children. And so a computer program, a full virtual world, which back then was a big deal. So I had to really connect with the Hebrew roots and started calling on my Messianic friends and whatnot. I said, what are we talking about? How can I really, truly be a witness? And so that pushed me in full time.
Yeah. And that's how you ended up with us. We wanted to do Messianic programming, which we were glad to have a two-time Emmy winner. And he...
Oh, you never mentioned that, Patrick. Come on.
nominated 8 times.
Wow.
I got robbed on 6 of them.
Okay, well, obviously. Yeah.
But he went and governed the crew for us, ran the crew for us, which is great because we are going to talk about miracles at Sinai.
Yes.
And we had a film crew there. We got it on record. So why don't we show it?
Okay, very good. Let's take a look.
We're here at the base of the mountain in the Jabalaz Range with 2 major peaks right beside it. But here we have everything that is stated in Scripture is at the altar that Moses and the Israelites built. The columns that were dedicated to the 12 tribes of Israel and the holding pins where they took the animals to be slaughtered. All this we find at the base of this mountain in Midian, where Scripture says Mount Sinai is located. This is the third day of our expedition at Mount Sinai. Yesterday, my beloved Catherine and I decided to marry at Moses' altar. We spent half the night getting ready.
Be ready the third day. Yehovah will come down upon Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people.
Yehovah called Moses and all the elders up to the mountain, right up there, and speaks to Moses and relays his covenant and his rulings. Moses then comes down and repeats them to all the people. All the people answered with one voice, "We will obey every word. We will obey every word." They did this under the cloud and lightning and thunder and shofar blasts, which was the huppah covering for the bride and the groom. From this point forward, you're known as Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Tuesday, March 14th, 2023. The covenant ceremony at Mount Sinai had not been renewed for 3,500 years. Almost immediately following the ceremony, a great wind arose and rapidly blew in storm clouds. There was thundering and lightning that covered the mountain of God. The heavens opened and a torrential rain fell from the skies. Eventually, the rain turned to hail, and even later, it turned to snow. The events of Sinai are an act of God that has continued to affect the entire region. 3 weeks before the events at Sinai, rivers sprang forth in the desert. On March 14, 2023, on the same day as the events of Sinai, the south of Arabia was flooded. In the days following the events at Sinai, snow, ice, and flooding occurred widely in Saudi Arabia, Oman, and the Negev Desert of Israel. In Isaiah 43:19, Yehovah said, "Behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall spring forth. Shall you not know it? I will even make a road in the wilderness and rivers in the desert." Could this be the prophecy of Isaiah 43:19 come to pass?
Okay, so Patrick, now you're a movie producer, television producer. That, I mean, you didn't have to add much to this, right? I mean, that the lightning in the sky, but those clouds that came in, that was real.
Yeah. The clouds were real. The thunder was real. We picked up some of it.
The lightning is real.
The lightning was definitely
real. So there was some lightning there.
There was definitely lightning. I enhanced it a little bit so you could see it. But other than that, yeah, that was it.
It was all there.
And both sides of the mountain. So there was a team at the Split Rock, which is on the west side of the mountain. And it was coming down there as well. They had to quickly get out of there. And there was thunder and lightning and all that happening there as well. So it was the whole mountain was engaged.
And this was what? How long after that? Nice, beautiful wedding where everyone was getting sunburned.
It's like 30 minutes. We had time to, took wow. us 20 minutes to walk down to where our Land Rovers were. And we were having our wedding reception in paper plates. And we had to scramble for the Land Rovers. Right in the middle of that, because it was coming in fast. It was impressive.
Goodness. Now, you told me when we were planning this, you said that the locals were very happy about this.
Sure.
So tell me about that whole experience.
Well, it's water. The grass will grow throughout the desert. I mean, the seeds are there. It'll grow. It'll feed their crops for all year. They'll be eating that grass. Normally, there's nothing there. I mean, nothing. So they were ecstatic. This makes
Did they tell you like how long it had been since something like that? Never mind rain, but like hail and snow?
Right. Well, they didn't tell us, but it rains there maybe twice a year. And we're not talking torrential rain. We're talking about very modest. They get about half an inch of rain every 20 years.
Wow.
So it's dry.
So this was ridiculously rare.
Yes, it was. So we were dancing with them at the rest area. All the Arabs were just really excited about this.
You said they were blaring music out of their Land Rovers or whatever.
Well, why don't we show them? We can show them. We have the
slide.
Let's show them. Let's show them. Start at the first one.
All right.
Show them the slides we're doing.
That's beautiful. I love it. And so there's this big celebration on your wedding day.
So we got a wedding reception in, and we got a dance, the wedding dance at the rest stop with the Arabs.
Your first dance, I understand, was not with Catherine, but Mohammed had grabbed you and started dancing first. Yeah.
So
here's an area, but it's in Arabia. You have to dance with Mohammed first.
Oh, I see. So here's the photo here. Now this is you and Catherine, right? Mohammed's in the background there somewhere. So this is at the rest stop.
That's him getting out of the car, yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so we're at the rest stop.
So snow and rain. And so this was just something, like you said on the video, it was truly biblical what happened here. This was crazy. I mean, even to the point where, gosh, this is what Isaiah is talking about? I mean,
well, not only that, but we did this on the third day. And third day is Tuesday. So, you know, the Shabbat is the seventh day. And they don't name all, except for the Sabbath day. They call the rest of the days of the week 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Right, yeah, even today, Yom Rishon, Yom Shli, Yom Shlishi.
Right, yes, so. That's exactly right. So on the third day is Tuesday. You know, you've got Sunday, the first day, Monday, the second day, Tuesday, the third day. We had not planned any of this. We were just walking into it like it had already been set up for us. Huh. We had not planned to marry. We definitely had not planned to marry. We didn't plan it on the third day.
Oh, you did not plan to marry?
Well, no, we did. They were engaged.
We were engaged.
He was trying to convince her for about a couple of years, and then
it took divine intervention.
Divine intervention. God spoke to each one of them separately in the hotel. She's up in the third floor. Okay. He's on the first floor,
She's having a dream where God is asking her, will you marry Miles? And she refuses twice. And then he asks her, will you trust me? And she says, yes, I will trust you. Meanwhile, I'm on the first floor. I hear her calling my name. Right now, I know it's something supernatural. It wakes me up from a sound sleep. But I get up, get dressed, and go to check on her, make sure she's okay. So I'm knocking on her door at 5 o'clock in the morning. And she opens the door and says, I think I just promised to marry you. So we planned it out for the last day that we were going to be there.
And you had, okay, how many witnesses were at this wedding, unplanned, in the desert, at the foot of Mount Sinai, which, by the way, is the most super cool wedding ever. I mean, how many people get married at the foot of Mount Sinai in the last 3,500 years?
Yeah, none. But there were probably, there were surely people that did get married there, you know, before.
That was so awesome. So describe this place where you got married. What's there archaeologically? And then again, how many people were there?
Well, there were 12 witnesses.
Imagine that.
Again, we didn't plan that. And we're sitting there, we're at Moses' altar, and there are all the columns to the 12 tribes, which are beautiful marble columns, and they're flat on the top. So everybody was, our 12 witnesses were sitting around on the 12 columns to the 12 tribes. It was epic.
It had to be just, it was surreal. I mean,
the only seats in the house.
It was, you know, one, I don't necessarily like to record weddings. And
he doesn't do weddings.
and normally because they're not successful. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, I don't know what it is. But
it's kind of a sacred thing too, really.
So there we're, you know, so we had a day to think about it. I mean, it wasn't, you know, we had quite a tight schedule.
Yeah.
And so we were scheduled to be at the mountain the last day, just one more time, get there in the morning. You know, it takes 3.5 hours to get there. As you're all-wheel driving or four-wheel driving for about an hour and a half after you leave the road. Well, as you saw in that video, they're starting to make a road because with the NEOM project, they're actually planning to put a year-round snow ski mountain on a peak just south of Mount
Artificial
Sinai.
Artificial snow.
Artificial snow and
whatever
stuff.
That is.
So they're making, it looks like a two-lane or four-lane divided highway. They're not playing.
They're going to be coming in.
I can go to the slide here of where we're at in Moses' altar, which is at the foot of Mount Sinai. And as you can see right here, this is kind of from the top looking down. You can see the altar there. And then it's just amazing. There's Dr. Jones and Moses' altar is actually, doesn't look like a regular, what you think of, you know, as an altar.
Well, it's for sacrificing animals.
Right. And you said there was more than one of
there's three of them.
There were three sacrifice places. It'd take you all day if you were sacrificing a lot of animals.
So I had to have two teams doing this.
That's like why they have
teams.
The
three teams.
We see here the slide before, you got this corral thing where they're coming in, and then you have the large altar area for the cattle, and then it's three smaller ones, which would be easily done for the goats and lambs and stuff.
I find it very curious that there's a right angle in that because, you know, several years ago, who was it? Temple Grandin had described that is the best way to corral cattle.
For some reason, they get nervous when they see other animals being sacrificed before them.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. So that's probably why the bend.
Exactly.
And also the lay of the land there. It's, you know, you got a stream coming right down. And that stream with the rain was running while we were there, which is amazing.
After we left.
So it's almost like you've seen.
Oh, it's been 100 years since there's been any water in this stream. But no.
So you get this live replay of Mount Sinai and the Israelites while you're there.
In Exodus 19, it's like everything, you know, the thunder, the lightning, the cloud that covers the mountain, the shofar.
Yeah, because those clouds, again, you did not insert those patterns.
No.
You shot that. You grabbed the camera and said, quick, there's a storm coming.
We got to capture this, And then drivers come to us and say, the Bedouin drivers, we have to get out of here. because that'll turn into mud. We won't be able to get out of here. And so we're less than 5 minutes down the road, and now we're experiencing puddles that, I mean, that are throwing mud up over the top of the Land Cruiser. I mean, that's a Suburban, basically. And you know, the wipers wipe, open it up, we could see. I mean, it's like, are we going to get out of here? I mean, it was that kind of thing. So we beat the storm out. And so once we got to the paved area, it was a rest area, and all the vehicles then gathered there because we had quite a few. I think we had 7 vehicles at that point full of our team that were still there. And then that's where the dance happened. But as you can see the in this photo here, you can see the troughs there. And what I like about this is it shows, because the Bible says that the stones could not be carved in this altar. It had to be plain stones. So they fit the stones together, and still some of that is still standing. And this was...
It's all still standing. This place is so remote, or it was. Go ahead.
It's been there for 3,500 years, but it's been protected, and the locals wouldn't let anybody in there, and it's way off the road. But more than that, it's very dry, so everything's preserved. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the artifacts that we're going to show you in that are just what's on the surface.
And that's the way a lot of ancient, been to, you know, a few museums like this where they show that the ancient peoples from all over the world, they would take their dead and bring them to a very dry place, whether it's top of a mountain or whatever, and just let the body dry out. And that was their, you know, preservation method, mummification just by dry air, essentially.
That works.
Yeah.
Right? That's probably what they did in the ceremony. It's too, in the cemetery that is there, because it's way too rocky to... you know, to dig.
Oh, they put rocks around, probably put rocks on top or something like that. But there's some interestingly arranged standing stones and things like that in that cemetery. What was interesting about this that struck me is this is where they were sacrificing before the tabernacle was built and why they were building it. So they were using this for about 18 months, this whole space. So this That's is where true. God told them to come back to this mountain and sacrifice, make a sacrifice. That was kind of a high priority to come back and come back to the backside of that mountain. So they had to go around the mountain.
Which is a long way.
And they did it in a short order, pretty fast. They got there. And once they got there, there's plenty of space in the valley there to camp. And we actually did camp there. And so we have some behind-the-scenes pictures of that we'll show you later.
Wow, that's special. That is really amazing.
This was the last expedition across the desert to Sinai.
Yeah, now tell me why you say that.
Well, they built a road, and while we were there, we came in across the desert in our Land Rovers, which is a bumpy ride, but we went all around the region, you know, in crossing the desert. But while we were there at Sinai during that period, they built a road in there. Wow. Which you could see in the film.
They're building.
They're setting up for tourism. They'll have hotels there. Everyone can come, and this is prophetic. You know, it says in Isaiah 1 and Micah, it says that all in the end days, all nations will come up to Har Yehovah. That's the mountain of God in Hebrew. They will all come up to Har Yehovah. And then that will set off a new series of events.
And you know, that sort of gives us some comfort that the mountain and the area around it will not be disturbed because Jehovah said in his word, all people will come. Yes, there's a road, but if there's nothing to be seen there, why would people come? So it's going to be preserved. So
they're already coming. They were already coming over there. So it's happening now. That prophecy is happening right now.
And we have a behind-the-scenes stuff. So let's hang on to that. We're going to come back in just a second. So we have Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire with us. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for making this possible. Yes, you made this possible. Your donations make this show possible. It's the only way this happens. These guys had to come in from Texas. They had to hop a plane. They had to go in a hotel. You did that. Thank you. That's the only way this happens. And your donations ensure that other people can now see this into the future. So we thank you for donating to Shabbat Night Live, and we're going to allow you to do that in just a second here. We'll be right back. Hey, thank you for supporting Shabbat Night Live. Imagine, if you will, 3,000 plus years ago, you are behind the scenes at Mount Sinai. What's going on? What's the story that we don't ever find in the Bible? You know, what actually went on there? Well, in modern times, I mean, Dr. Miles Jones and Patrick McGuire, you have been to the foot of Mount Sinai. You have literally camped, as you mentioned in the first segment, at Mount Sinai.
We were camping there.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't even imagine camping at Mount Sinai. And then Patrick, you started getting some pictures early in the morning that are just surreal.
Well, you know, it's 80, we're there in March, so it's like in the 80s during the day, but at night it dropped down to 35 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was interesting.
And you are literally intense.
We were intense. It was intense.
And it was intense, yeah.
We had a generator going to charge the batteries overnight.
And you think about it too. So the Israelites, okay, that gives perspective. Yeah. The Israelites were there camping in tents.
Yeah.
And it was 80 during the day and 30 at night.
It's like that in the desert. Very hot in the day, but very, very, it can be freezing at night.
Right, it doesn't hold the heat. It just, it's gone.
Yeah, but every time you'd get up and you'd go out, you'd have this scene. I mean, there was a beautiful full moon, so you could see the mountain almost, not quite like it was day, but close. But in this one, what time was this taken?
This was at about before 6. And that was a full moon that you're seeing.
Wow.
And then I turned around and there's the sun coming up over Aaron's altar or the golden calf altar right there.
Yes.
And so as the sun then burst on there, you can see now we see these shots of the golden mountain because it turns gold in that early morning light. You can see the moon is starting to go down and the sun's coming up. And then this is a shot of the tents that we had and there was quite a few of them.
And you literally had a tent of Benjamin there.
Yes, Benjamin was there.
Because you see your son Benjamin, who's actually in the studio with us today, looking on.
Wave at the camera, Ben. Yeah. He got us our wonderful drone film. It was just fabulous.
So the next morning, one of the guys has got, they're getting ready to climb the mountain. And so we're praying, and so the Bedouins gave us these
caftans.
What do they call it?
Caftans.
I had my puffer jacket with me, but he's in short sleeves. He's ready to climb. So we prayed, and then part of the group headed to the mountain, to climb the mountain. And so you see him heading to the mountain there, and that big boulder in the middle underneath the peak does have some serious inscriptions on it, which we will look at here. So now we're getting more in the daytime, and then here's Miles and his then fiance. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to point out, now this is shot from Moses' altar. So we're at the base of the mountain, but we look up and you can see the cleft of the rock at the top.
Is this a traditional rendering, or is there some proof that this is probably where Moses was?
We assume it is because it's the place where he saw it. So is there another cleft in the rock in the mountain? I didn't see one, but...
Mm. It almost looks like the two Ten Commandment things together. You see a little tree there,
a little tree,
which is way cool. And then below that is Elijah's cave, where also Paul was there. And likely that's where Moses would stay when he was, or not. He could have been anywhere.
But Elijah stayed there.
But Elijah definitely stayed
there. Yeah, that one
there,
we definitely.
And Paul stayed there.
And that was an incredible scene in the Bible. If you haven't read it, go back and read it. The encounter that he had with Yehovah on the mountain while he was staying in that cave.
And then we have another shot, a couple other shots in the cave.
That little tree at the top, might that have been a bush?
It wasn't burning.
Burning this time.
But it burns without being consumed.
Well, it's likely because he came to that side of the mountain, which is the east side of the mountain, to where the bush was. Who knows that maybe Moses' altar was right there near the bush.
Can you imagine if there's been foliage there like for 3,000 years just growing there? Or maybe to think about.
I never thought about that. But, Yehovah spoke from the mountain to the entire assembly of people. He could have spoken to Moses in the same way he's standing out there where the altar would be and seeing that burning bush up there.
And that's that whole behind the scenes thing, right? You have a new perspective when you're actually there that, maybe this is the way it happened because now that I see it,
absolutely,
this makes sense and doesn't. And
Well, Moses, for instance, when he's coming down and they're worshiping at the Aaron's altar or the golden calf altar, Well, here we are at the cave. This is shot from the mouth of the cave, and I outlined where you can see that rock formation of where Aaron's altar, they call it, the golden calf altar is. You can still see these are shots from the mouth of Elijah's cave. Mm-hmm. And that's Catherine sitting right at the edge of it. Mm-hmm. And you can see behind her is Moses' altar. And the dry stream from there. And then, let me see, we go down one more. You can see then from that edge shooting down, you can see Moses' altar there. Okay, so from Moses' altar, we can see Elijah's cave in the cleft of the rock. We cannot see, because that little foothill obscures the mountain because we're that close.
Now keep in mind, that's like a 4-hour climb from Moses' altar up to where this picture is taken. Well, it's very steep.
We've seen in other photos too that those rocks, they don't look that big, but when you had people there, it's almost like, did you put those people in Photoshop or something?
Yeah, just
because they look really tiny. So this is a lot bigger place than it looks. Yeah.
So the elders' plateau, you cannot see from Moses' altar. But when you get up there, it's like the size of a football field.
Yeah,
it's huge. And that's where the 70 elders ate and did that thing. And then this picture here.
This is Brian Williams, who's one of the new generation of Exodus documenters, doing great job. He's done some wonderful films for us. So you'll see more of him.
But he'll never be able to do an expedition across the desert anymore because he'll just take the road.
Unless it goes today.
I guess you could do it. It would just be foolhardy when you get on the tourist bus. Yeah,
drive next to the road, type of thing, the back road.
But anyway, Brian Williams is still with us, and he's continuing to do great work.
And then we want to credit Keith for
Keith
Johnson hiding this shofar in the little rock at the plateau. And so our team all got a chance to blow the shofar. So we're down.
You're up on the mountain.
Oh, I got to tell Keith Johnson about this. He'll be thrilled. I don't know if he even knows this. Or did you tell him?
No.
No, we haven't.
We're shooting at the base.
Sure somebody has.
We're videotaping at the base at Moses' altar. And we hear the shofar sounds echoing because the acoustics there are amazing. Mm-hmm. So they're echoing it. They're trying to blow the shofar. And Benjamin's blowing it. About three or four of them were blowing this, trying to blow the shofar anyways.
And then we hear people chanting the Aaronic blessing in Hebrew coming down from the mountain.
Oh, my goodness.
Catherine chanted it, but they're at the Elders Plateau and at the top of the mountain, there are other people that are doing the same thing. That wasn't planned either. We happened to have three people up on the mountain that knew the Aaronic blessing in Hebrew. Wow. It was pretty amazing stuff.
Did you have Arabic people with you?
There were some guys that were there,
And so we're there going, what are you people doing?
Of course, our tour person who puts all that together, she was quite nervous, and then the radical, like the ISIS types, they're really worried that anybody's going to be worshiping in there. So we had to kind of cool it.
Never be another marriage at Mount Sinai.
Probably not.
So we get to the top, and at the top, you have a little marker there, which is way cool. And then Benjamin.
It's our team.
And Jenny and Jonathan, and then one of the guys.
On this photo right here, so you're showing.
Yeah.
Now this is the rest of you've noted already, the rest of the landscape is brown. Mm-hmm. Right?
This is black.
And gold, it looks like gold. And this is black at the top. Mm-hmm. This is not some shadow people saw on a photo.
No.
This not is a shadow. Black rock. What? I mean.
And you can flip over those rocks, and it's tan underneath.
Come on.
It's pretty crazy.
Really?
It's a different color underneath.
So this is literally
something.
So there's no other explanation that when God rained down fire with the commandments, this is it. You're standing where it happened.
It's kind of interesting because it's this peak and all around that whole peak. I mean, you look at it from satellite, there's a lot of, so mm-hmm. God was intensely there.
Like, I wanted people to realize this because we actually have a rock from there.
Yeah.
And I've had people, we have it in a little glass case, and whenever people come through for a tour, I take it out of the glass case and I let them hold it, and I tell them to rub it and smell the rock. Mm-hmm. You can smell smoke.
Wow, that's incredible.
I mean, it's real.
Yes, it is real, and you've got to remember that Yehovah came to earth here. That means he created a portal. He rendered the space-time continuum to come down from the spiritual plane to the earthly plane. And this is mentioned in Psalm 24. It's all about Har Yehovah, but you don't see that because they mistranslate it. They call it the hill of the Lord. And so you don't know they're talking about, but in Hebrew, it's Har Yehovah. And it talks exactly about this, and it calls it an everlasting portal. That means it's still operating today. Mm. So it's an incredible psalm. Go read Psalm 24 if you haven't ever done it. It's speaking exactly about
And obviously the evidence is still standing there as Absolutely. A witness. Mm-hmm.
So here we are from the top, a shot that kind of, I noted where the golden calf altar is, the back of the cleft from the top, seeing it from the top of the mountain. And obviously the stone there is dark, black, and then everything else is tan. Mm-hmm. So then from Moses' altar, I took this shot with my telephoto. So you can see it clearly just through the valley. There's a little bit of a valley there where that cleft, that bunch of rocks are. And so when Moses was coming down with the tablets, and Joshua is saying, hey, what's going on? They're having a part, what is it? Is it war or something? Because they could see that. They could see something was going on
there. They could see that coming down the mountain,
And so then here we are at the level. We were given access. The gate was open. You've seen where it's all locked up and everything. When the gate was open, we were in there. Here's a drone shot Miles is discovering.
So again, you see how big these rocks are.
They're huge.
To the people.
They're huge.
And you have to wonder, because unless I'm mistaken, I don't think we have dimensions as to how big the golden calf was in the Bible.
Not really.
So how big was this calf? Mm. You know, like how big did they make this thing?
Took a lot of gold.
Yeah.
Maybe the size of a calf. Maybe, I don't know. It could be bigger.
Who knows?
But they sure put a lot of glyphs and carvings around it.
But that's a good point, because here we have cattle worship motifs, which are absolutely critical to proving that these Israelites came from Egypt.
And this is one of them right here. You want to talk about that?
Well, this is from the Apis bull dance. And there are depictions like this in only four places in the world. Okay, you've probably seen the wonderful friezes at Crete, where it's got the acrobat grabbing on to the horns of the bull, and another one just leaped over onto his back. It's exactly what you see here. You see the bull's horns.
So this is
like an acrobat grabbing on here, and another one just landed on the back.
So this is sort of a...
Don't try this at home, folks.
A rodeo bullfighting kind of thing that was ancient, apparently.
It is ancient. And this is found only in Crete, Mycenae on that mainland of Greece. In Mount Sinai, this depiction is definitely the bull dance, no doubt about that. And the other place it's found is in Goshen. So these people
came
from Goshen. And this bull dance ritual spread all over the Mediterranean. It became the bullfight, which was imported to the New World, where we kind of absorbed it into our culture as the bull ride. Mm. Which you see in the rodeos. That's a direct descendant of
Crete,
the Apis
Greek,
bull dance.
Spain, where we find the bull dance kind of, bull fighting
the
originating.
The bull fighting, and which was a descendant of the Apis bull ritual, the bull dance.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So it was kind of cool because everybody else is going around shooting all the different pictures of the other artifacts, and I'll show you some of them here that are on the altar. But Miles just did a quick circle around the place and said, there it is. We're going up there because that's the evidence.
Yeah.
That is the absolute evidence that these people came from Goshen, that this is the place. See, that's really important.
That's what you look at. Look at the iconic art that's there. Where do you find that in the world?
Yeah.
You know, go to the...
So this is all Egyptian stuff in Midian. What is Egyptian stuff doing in
the horse one?
So the next one that we go to, here's we finally had a rest time, and you see how big that is.
This was an archaeological survey, and most of these people were from our team, B'nai Manah Institute, and we were there to find the new evidence or whatever is there to record it, so it won't be lost. And so we were going through all the rocks, and we found a number of new inscriptions. So we're taking a break there.
So this right here, this picture shows the gray. So the road making had carved into one of the bluffs and rocks, okay? And so when it's carved into, that's gray granite. But because it's all that ancient, what do they call that?
The patina
surface.
The weathering on the outtones.
It's all tan. But what's more interesting, and I didn't get a chance to get a still of this, just on that same bluff is a major inscription.
Ooh.
And we were close. I mean,
just missed it.
Yeah,
we were concerned that we are still concerned about those inscriptions being damaged or destroyed, but at least they're aware of that now and are trying to prevent it. I wish they'd be more.
And you said there was another inscription like 8 feet from the road or something like this.
Yeah.
On the other, in Rafidim, on the backside of this, where the split rock is.
One of the big things we were looking for were more footprints. We had a handful of pictures, but it's with that many people there must be more. And we found many more.
Oh, wow.
Many more.
So here's one that we did find. And this is between the golden calf altar and Moses' altar, just to get there. Mm-hmm. And we walk and pass it. What is this? And as you can see.
I'd never seen this before. And all the documentation I had studied of it. But what this is a representation of giants. You can see the antelope there, the ones with the big curved horns, and they're like a quarter of the size of these giant figures. But obviously done by the same author. You can tell by the color of the patina, because it immediately starts to weather another layer over it. So you can tell if something new is added. So these are all done at the same time. So you can see some perspective. The thing about this is that the Israelites had actually seen the Anakim. They'd seen the giants when they took their scouting trip into the promised land. So it's almost a given that they would have recorded that on the rocks.
Hmm.
So you're probably looking at the only picture of the Anakim that are out there.
All right, so this was probably the 10 who doubted who drew these.
Might have been.
They didn't last very long.
I said that's not true. There are a depiction of them in Seti's tomb, for example. There are some. So
they were known.
They were known. Wow. They've been written about widely.
How can we know these are giants? Because there's the antelope.
These are very, very small. No, there aren't other people. But
we just see by the size.
We know how big antelopes are.
Okay.
And they're four times the size of the antelopes. So.
Yeah, because they made all the antelopes the same size.
Yeah.
They were consistent to make sure.
And the giants are the same size, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The next.
They're bow-legged, apparently.
It
happens in Texas a lot.
the next slide is where there's a larger monument rock also in the path. Mm-hmm. And this one apparently has some more ancient stuff on there, but as you can see in the highlighted area is something that Dr. Jones was very interested in that seemed to make all the rest of it make sense.
This is an icon you see throughout Egypt. It's Horus, the son of the sun god, being suckled by Hathor, the cow goddess, who is the patron saint of miners and of this area. And that's
a close up.
That's it right there. That is the icon. You don't want to be crawling under a cow or a bull anyway, but this is a cow, no horns, right? So this is a depiction of Horus being suckled by Hathor, which you see all over Egypt. So these people that made these, they came from Egypt.
Wow. Well, let's continue next time because there's a lot more to see here and we've run out of time, but we can't leave this hanging because there's a great story that I want you to tell next time, Patrick, of the wedding and just the realization you had there, I'm going to say from Yehovah, as you're standing there watching Catherine and Dr. Miles get married. So, all right, so you join us next week because you don't want to miss that story. Great stuff here. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next time on Shabbat Night Live. Until then, Shavua Tov and Shabbat Shalom.